Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit coderedroofers.com.
Wave bye-bye to all the middle-of-the-road people. Kristen Sinema's not going to run again. Nikki Haley dropped out of the race. And all I can say to the two of them is, hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more. No, I'm just kidding. But it's interesting to me. I have a theory about the middle. And it's not that I don't believe in the art of the deal. I do. I believe in finding common ground in any area where you can, and then carving out a plan that works. But I've discovered after many, many years of thinking that I was in the middle, or that there were enough of us who had strong opinions about economics and strong opinions about social issues, and that sometimes they crossed over to what I would have considered the opposite side. And so I did discover one thing when I was trying to do that on the fence kind of broadcasting. The only thing in the middle of the road is roadkill. And when I decided not to be roadkill, I had to figure out what were my principles and how was I going to not just understand why they were my principles, but how was I going to convince other people that they were the right principles? And I don't mean left-right. Because there's no art of compromise if the two sides have no clue what they're talking about. You know, there are some things I'm just not willing to compromise on. And there are some things that people who call themselves liberals or progressives these days, they're not willing to compromise on. And I at least respect them for that. I think one of the people I had the most respect for ever was Denis Kucinich, who's about as far to the left as anybody in the universe, sat in Congress, and even the lefties were just stunned by Denis upholding his principles no matter what. But he really believed. You know, he wasn't just saying it. He was living it. And he was making a very compelling argument for his side all the time. Fun to debate a guy like Kucinich. Very much fun. Because he could articulate his positions. And you had to be thoughtful when you argued with him. You couldn't just say, "Wow, you're wrong and I'm right." You know, that didn't work with a guy like Denis. So, you know, that kind of interchange or exchange between people who believe one thing and people who believe the opposite is where the compromises are possible. But these people who really don't believe much of anything, I guess I have no patience with them, because you ought to have some idea about what's right and what's wrong in your world, in your world view. Okay? Like, it's never right for terrorists to kill innocent civilians. Never under any circumstances is that right. And never will I abide by making excuses, you know, "Oh, well, the poor things, they felt they had no other recourse." This is 2024. There's plenty of recourse. There's a whole internet where you can get information and grievances addressed. You don't have to kill innocent civilians. I don't know that you ever had to do that, but let's say before there was so many methods of communicating ideas, maybe people felt like, you know, they had to. I certainly think that if people like Rosa Parks hadn't stood their ground, or sat their ground, as the case may be, on that bus, that maybe the needle wouldn't have moved that year or the next year. It might have been many more years of systemic racism. But because she had principles that were ironclad, You know, because Martin Luther King believed the words of the founding fathers that all men were created equal. Because he believed that, he stood on that principle. He never wavered. He wasn't looking for a compromise. Rosa Parks wasn't asking, like, you know, could you guys just be nice and let me sit on this bus? She was saying all people of color should be treated equally to people who are not of color. And a seat on the bus should not be determined by the color of your skin. But she was right. And the racists could not defend their position. The race haters and the race mongers and the Ku Klux Klan and those kinds of organizations, they lost the battle of public opinion. Because there were people who were strong enough to stand up for what was right. Sometimes you just got to be willing to go the last mile. And Kristen Sinema was never willing to do that. And I don't think Nikki Haley was really ready to do that. You know, she threw in with every big dollar corporate donor. How are you different than every other politician if your first action is to say, I'll take Soros' money, I'll take anybody's money? Gee, thanks. Where's your principles? So that's why, you know, when people sort of do themselves in, I'm eager to congratulate them. And my final comments to them is, don't let the door hit your behind on the way out, okay? That's all. I need people who are willing to fight for their principles. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to agree with their principles, because I'm not. If their principles are in direct opposition to mine, then let's duke it out in the arena of ideas. I don't believe in violence being the method for coming to compromise. You know, that's why I don't like Antifa. I didn't like BLM. I don't like any of those groups that said, well, we'll just burn things. That's not how you convince people who may not be on the same side of an issue with you that they're wrong. You have to engage in some really thoughtful conversation. Kristen Sinema didn't do that. I mean, I wish she did. She's now pretending that she did, but she didn't. She just, you know, she helped put together that so-called bipartisan, but it wasn't bipartisan, immigration bill. And then when it didn't, you know, when it failed, she said, give me my marbles, I'm going home. What you need to do, if you really believe, if she thought it was the right, you know, strategy, the right plan for this country, she should have stayed and fought. But she didn't. And that's what frustrates me, because what would have normally been a congratulatory compliment to someone who decided to leave because they felt their principles were being violated all the time, I just shook my head and said, I don't even really know what her principles are. She was never able to articulate them clearly. She just kept saying, like, well, I want to compromise. And I went, okay, what things are you willing to not compromise and what things are you willing to compromise? Make it clear to me and then maybe we can come to some agreement. But with her, it was all like, well, we need to compromise. Okay, should we compromise over the death penalty? Should we compromise over abortion? Should we compromise over immigration? What are the subjects where you think we need to compromise? But she never said that. She just said, they're mean. Everybody's dug in on both sides. Well, you didn't know that when you went there? Because that shows a naivete that tells me you shouldn't have gone there. She replaced Jeff Flake, in case anybody doesn't remember. See, the problem with people like me is we know the whole backstory. So, you know, we're very jaded when it comes to the representation of the news today. Like, if you forgot, Jeff Flake was this big anti-Trump Republican in Arizona who knew there was no way he could win another election in Arizona because of the way he talked, kind of like Liz Cheney. Well, exactly like Liz Cheney, actually. his constituency didn't want to hear what he was saying anymore. So he knew that he was not going to win an election. And time to get out. I get that. That makes sense to me. But it was Kristen Sinema who came in. So did she really believe, like, did she ever have a conversation with Jeff Flake? You know, I know she was a Democrat, so at the time she probably didn't get into a lot of conversations with Republicans, but you would think that if you're replacing somebody at such a lofty level, that you would talk to the person who's leaving and say, hey, look, give me some ideas here of where we are when it comes to the representation of the people of Arizona in the United States Senate. But apparently she didn't have that conversation because Jeff Flake would have told her, everybody's very extreme. You know, people are on the right and people are on the left and there's no room in the middle. So if your whole philosophy is you got to carve out a place in the middle, good luck. That's what he would have told her because he couldn't do it. And he was an experienced politician. She was a zero experienced politician. It always looks like, oh, I could do that. I see people all the time who are running for office and they ask to meet with me and we sit down and we have a, you know, a cup of coffee together. We have lunch, you know, I listen to them. And I would say 8 out of 10 are totally unprepared for campaigning for office and even worse, totally unprepared for serving. It's not that they don't care. They care deeply. But that doesn't make you a good congressman, a good senator, a good governor, a good president. I care, but I know I would be totally useless in one of those positions because I'm very intolerant of the other side. And thank God, my job doesn't require me to be tolerant. I don't have to sit around and excuse the behavior of the Biden administration any more than I had to sit around and excuse the behavior of the Bush administration, which I never did, never voted for the guy, never liked the guy. So I'm a bipartisan hater. Well, I didn't hate anybody, but you know, I have principles. If your principles line up with my principles, then let's go forward. And that doesn't mean that you have to be morally equal to me or striving for your spiritual life the way I'm striving for mine. But politically, where do you stand on these issues that are important and how hard are you willing to fight? Because if you're not willing to fight for your principles or your ideas or your policies, then you will be chewed up and spit out like Kristen Sinema. And that was my problem with Nikki Haley from the beginning. I've had dinner with Nikki Haley. She was not a stranger to me. And she was not prepared for what the next presidency is going to look like. So, you know, see ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. I was listening to people yesterday saying, oh, well, she's positioned really well for 2025 or 6 or 28 or whatever. They had all this, oh, and she held the line and people have all kinds of respect for her. Let me make my prediction, all right? Nikki Haley will end up with a TV gig if she's lucky. And then that's it. Yeah, maybe she'll write a couple of books, make enough money to just sit home. I don't know. I look at Trey Gowdy, right? You know, there was a guy who actually added value to Congress. He had a great prosecutorial background. He's a quick individual when it comes to coming up with theories and being able to articulate his positions. He's great at that. But he couldn't take Congress. So what's he doing now? He's on Fox. You know, okay. I get it. Nikki, please don't go to MSLSD. Just don't do that. Because they'll chew you up and spit you out. Anyway, don't forget to download our app. I keep saying that, and people apparently keep doing it, so thank you. But the app is useful. You can participate in a whole bunch of our contests, and you can get breaking news stories, and not only that, but you can listen to all the podcasts right on your phone or your laptop. But if you don't want to do that, please check out our website, 850wftl.com. Quick break, and I'll be right back.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to play the game that everybody else is playing today about how Donald Trump needs to extend the olive branch to Nikki Haley. And, you know, he's the kind of guy who would actually pick her to run with him or put her in the cabinet. I'm not playing that game because I don't agree. You know, there are just some people that you can't trust. And there's no way he can trust her. Now, people keep saying, yeah, but, you know, Mike Pence endorsed, I believe it was Ted Cruz in 2016. But that's not the same thing. You know, Mike Pence didn't know Donald Trump, had never really spent any time conversing with Donald Trump. But then he spent five years campaigning, or almost a year, campaigning with Donald Trump, and then 4 years in Washington with Donald Trump. So, you know, he can pick at Donald Trump as he does, and he even attempted to run against Donald Trump, but at least he pulled out real quickly. But Nikki Haley really didn't do anything for her political future with this run. She just didn't. And yeah, she can raise money. She proved she can raise money. Well, if I was her, I'd keep my powder dry and write a book. And then in 2 years, run for the Senate. And then in 6 years, she'll be positioned for a presidential campaign. And by then, people will have basically forgotten how just weird her campaign was, because I found it really weird. And they might be ready to consider her, not to mention at that point, Donald Trump will just be a footnote in politics. He will have served his second term, and I suspect that he will just collapse on a, you know, an island somewhere and try to recover from this onslaught of attacks that have been coming at him for the last 8, 9, 10 years. So I was excited last night. I was pleased last night with the results. I wasn't surprised by Vermont. Anybody can vote for any, you know, any party in the primary. And she was definitely speaking to Democrats and telling them, look, Biden's your candidate, but if you want to make sure Donald Trump's not the opposing candidate because he stands the best chance of demolishing the Democrat, then, you know, vote for me. Give me something to go home with. I won D.C. and Vermont. You know, how does that elevate you? It doesn't. So we'll see. I have no idea who Donald Trump is considering. I've heard some really interesting suggestions and from people I admire, and then some really stupid suggestions from people I admire, because it gets very emotional. You know, we don't know how to separate our feelings from facts sometimes. But if you don't do that, you won't come to the right conclusion. So I try to separate my feelings. And I have some people I'd rather see in that position, particularly since there's no denying that at 77 and with the kind of assaults that he's going to be taking when he wins, got to have a strong person in the second chair as his co-pilot. You do. You got to have somebody who's ready to lead. And I've got preferences. You know, people know I had a dream that Mike Huckabee was on the ticket. The last 48 hours, I've been thinking Ben Carson. You know, there's a lot of stellar people out there who I think and have thought in the past would make good presidents. So I don't think he has any shortage of people to choose from. But I know Donald Trump. He will do whatever he wants to do. And the advisor that gets his ear, the last advisor that speaks into his ear, that's what he's going with. So people are really jockeying for position right now in the Trump campaign, which is interestingly, maybe not the prettiest campaign anybody's ever seen, but how could you have a more successful campaign than this one? I cannot remember any candidate on the Republican side winning this many primaries, being literally in a position next week to have tied up enough delegates to be guaranteed that at the convention he will be the nominee. I just don't remember one. Maybe I'm wrong, but not in my lifetime. You know, maybe, I don't know, Grover Cleveland or somebody from the past. So when people say, oh, he's chaos and he's using money to pay his legal bills, I say, well, I don't know. This looks to me like a pretty well-run campaign because I've never seen anybody achieve what he's achieved. He gets indicted, his poll numbers go up. He gets his mugshot taken, his poll numbers go up. He gets stripped off a ballot, his poll numbers go up. There's a hunger in this country to fight against the establishment. We're not interested in what the elites want. We want exactly what he promised us in 2016. He's promising it again. We want somebody who's willing to fight for us and doesn't care what the world thinks of him. As a matter of fact, he does care. He wants the world to be afraid of the United States of America, to respect the United States of America, and that's what I want. And at the end of that sentence, I'm going to put an exclamation point. That's my rationale. So I told people at Club 47 that I was going to put together the bullet points for them to go out for the next, you know, 6 months and just hammer these bullet points, and not to be talking to one another. We already know who we're voting for, but you got to start talking to people who don't want to vote for Donald Trump or don't understand the whole MAGA thing or have been frightened about the MAGA thing by the media. You got to be able to make the case. And so I got a couple of emails, interesting emails. I have one email. The guy actually laid out a lot of the same ideas that I have, and I'm going to steal two of his that I didn't have. And then last night, when I got home and, you know, we had Din Tesler, the young man that was on my show last week, who was a survivor from the Nova Music Festival on October 7th and literally saved dozens of people and hid in a cactus bush. So he came to speak to us last night. So it was a very moving evening. And then I came home and it was a kind of a troubled sleep for me, going to sleep just knowing what he had endured and what the hostages are going through. You know, just really is upsetting, right? But then I woke up this morning and I went to my bookshelf and I pulled out Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. And I said, this is the model for how we fight and win. Now, obviously, I'm taking very different positions than Saul Alinsky or Hillary Clinton or any of the rest of the people who operate in Rules for Radicals. But this is going to be rules for, you know, Joyce Kaufman listeners, rules for conservative talk radio listeners. And I was hoping I could do 10 bullet points, but it may end up being 15. You're going to need all the ammunition you can get. And I said I was going to do it, so I'm going to do it. But I can't do this tonight or even tomorrow. I'm probably going to need 3 or 4 days to get it together. And then everybody's going to be invited to download it, read it, and do it. You got to do it. Because if you don't do it, I'm really scared. When I come back from this break, I want to talk about the future governor. Maybe I'm overly happy right now, or maybe I believe harder than it might actually be possible. But I think the next governor of North Carolina is going to be a man named Mark Robinson. And I remember inviting Mark Robinson on my show years ago, just because of a speech he made about the Second Amendment. And, you know, last night, you should have heard him. I switched over to the liberal stations and they were like, oh, he's a conspiracy theorist. Oh, my God, he's MAGA. Oh, he's crazy. Whenever I hear them on MSNBC saying that or on CNN saying that, I go, that's my guy. Let me take a quick break and I'll be right back. Last night, you know, we're all watching the primaries, primarily for maybe two or three different reasons. Most of us are watching them for the presidential race and wondering just how badly of a beating that Nikki Haley's going to take. And does Joe Biden get, you know, sort of pilloried by the non-committed votes and whatever. You know, we're watching for that. But what really some of us were watching were some of the other races. And I think that it's important to realize that when Donald Trump gets reelected, if he doesn't have a Congress that's going to support him, we're in the same mess that we were in during the first term. I also wanted to see who was going to end up running in California. I mean, we know Adam Schiff is going for Dianne Feinstein's seat, but in California, they do this, like, I don't know what you call it, you know, I call it a suicide race, where the top two contenders end up running against one another, and the expectation, and what it's been many times, is two Democrats running, right? But Steve Garvey, the ball player, the retired ball player, he did end up in second place, so now he'll be running against Adam Schiff, and that's going to be a race you want to watch. Not that I have any confidence in the morons in California, including, you know, blood relatives of mine. But that'll be an interesting race, because if Steve Garvey has an excellent showing or wins, that's going to be huge. And I think it's possible. You know, I don't think it's likely, but I think it's possible. The other race that I must admit, I'm just so interested in this particular candidate that it's not a matter of, you know, do I think that this candidate needs a lot more exposure and everybody's going to have to send money to him? I don't think that. I think he has a much stronger case. I think he's in a great position. And I think he is also going to be a pivotal person going forward. Mark Robinson is the official Republican nominee for the gubernatorial seat in North Carolina. So how that fleshes out, there's so many dynamics to this. He'll be running against the current attorney general, a guy by the name of Josh Stein. And, you know, Mark is a fire starter, a fire brand. He is a make no bones about it conservative. He's 55 years old. His entrance into American politics was as a very grown-up man. He's been serving as the 35th Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina since 2021. He's very clear about his positions on major issues. He's been told that he can't talk that way. He shouldn't talk about people that way. But he hasn't stopped. And the reason he hasn't stopped is because he has got principles and he's willing to fight for them. And I like that. Sorry. I know that a lot of people wish everybody was playing nice, but they're not going to play nice. And they're going to take everything out of context that this guy says. He had that viral speech about gun rights. He was at a Greensboro City Council meeting, right? And he got up and he talked about, you know, why black people should support the Second Amendment more than anybody. And they said, oh, he makes terribly offensive comments and remarks. He made an analogy between abortion and slavery. He apparently, you know, has said things, repeated phrases that Adolf Hitler used, although he was certainly speaking about very different subjects. But he was the state's first African-American lieutenant governor, and he will be, I believe, the first African-American governor in North Carolina. There's no real good polling. I keep looking. And, you know, they are going after him with a vengeance. They call him a conspiracy theorist. He's now the Republican nominee. They started posting videos, like there's a video that about when he made a speech, and I believe he's at a church, if memory serves me correctly. He's at a church, and he talks about how there are just two genders. He said, I don't care how many drugs they take, how much cutting they do, what they wear, what makeup they put on, you cannot change your gender and your DNA. And he said it's not just a terrible societal idea, but he said something like it's just filthy. And why are we telling young people that these are not immutable characteristics? They are. You know, gender is not immutable. Now, your gender preference, maybe. You know, you may wish you were a boy. You may be attracted to the same gender that you are actually in the body of. We understand all that. You may even, on very rare occasions, less than 1% of the population, you may have gender dysphoria. And I have no objection to people who suffer from that having access to medical care. And I don't know what that medical care looks like. I guess there's psychiatric evaluation. I think there's a possibility of hormone therapies. But you got to be an adult, and you have to understand that you're still biologically going to be the other side. You can't change your DNA. You know, when I was having my second child, they had just started telling you the gender, right? And it really was an imperfect science at the time. It's not like it is today. And, you know, 6 weeks, you're having a boy, and you know you're having a boy. No. Then it was like at maybe 16 weeks, they'd show you this blurry sonogram, and they'd circle this genital and say, hey, look, you're having a boy. But it really wasn't clear. And if the baby's back, you know, if the baby was lying wrong, you didn't get to see that part, so you didn't know. Anyway, I had told my doctor, I do not want to know. I'm just old school. Surprise me, you know. I had a pretty strong feeling that it was different than the other pregnancy. Because, you know, I was pregnant with Jenya, I just, like, my hips spread. There was so much estrogen in my body, it was ridiculous. And the next time, big belly up front. And, yeah, my mother said, hey, this one's a boy. Okay. You know, it was fun guessing, and it was great finding out. But they don't do that anymore, right? I get it. But I had asked them, please don't tell me. So the nurse decides that she's not going to tell me, but she thinks she's dealing with some idiot, I guess. So she puts the notation on my chart of the gender. Like, I'm not going to know the difference between a circle and a cross and a circle and an arrow. I mean, come on, babe. I had multiple graduate degrees at the time. Like, why don't you look at my file? So I knew. At some point, I said, oh, man, I think it's a boy. I think that's what she put on the chart. I wasn't actually sure. I didn't look at it for very long because I got disturbed that it was there. But they knew, and now they totally know. Why? Because they get a sample of the DNA from the amniotic fluid, and they say, okay, here it is, boy. Or maybe they get more than a sample. I don't know how they do it these days, but it's pretty conclusive when they tell you. So if they know what the gender of your baby is in utero, why would you think that we're still guessing after the birth? Doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. And while I understand that there are legitimate problems and people have all kinds of, you know, weird ideas, we shouldn't be making them more, you know, making it easier to have the weird ideas. So he made a speech where he said, you're a boy or you're a girl, period. He also is ardently pro-life. That's not going to turn off lots of people. Matter of fact, it turns on lots of people. So here's my prediction. North Carolina is going to have a governor by the name of Robinson in the next election, and it'll be wonderful. The other thing I wanted to mention before I take a break before the last segment of the show today. Donald Trump met with Musk yesterday. Talk about me having some wild dreams and ideas. That was enough to set me on a whole new path. Anyway, don't forget, coming up after me is Eric Erickson, followed by Joe Pags and Lars Larson, the Overnight Guys. Then at 6 a.m., Jen and Bill will be back with the South Florida Morning Show. At 9, Brian Kilmeade. At 12, Dan Bongino. And then I always return at 3 o'clock, if it be as well, anyway. But for now, I have one segment left today, so please stay right where you are. I'll get to two stories that I really wanted to get to today, because I'm really kind of excited about my bullet points that I'm putting together. Because I can't tell you, go out and do this and then not help you to do it, because it's not going to be easy. So I'm excited about that. And maybe I talked about that a little too much today. But let me tell you two stories that I saw that really, if this doesn't, make your hair hurt, I don't know what will. The MIT professor. Now we're talking the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, okay? We'll all pretty much agree that they're at the forefront of research. Well, this professor is now saying that you cannot give out this mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. You have to suspend it immediately because it is causing, and this is a quote, an unprecedented level of harm, including the death of young people and children. And this is Retsef Levy, a professor at MIT. He says, this is not a theory anymore. These are proven facts that basically undermine any sense of safety about these vaccines. And this is a guy who for 30 years has been working in the areas of analytics and what he does, modeling. He looks at risk management so that you're making good choices about what you tell people they should do. So that, I think, is very interesting, and I'm going to try to get him on the air because I think we need to know. Look, I have very serious concerns about that mRNA vaccine, very. You know, I just see it affecting so many people in so many negative ways. It has to be that, because why would we all be going through some of the things we're going through? It just doesn't make sense. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is, you know, Donald Trump met with Musk yesterday, and this was a day after, or that maybe the same day, that Musk said we now know, the New York Post had documented, that this administration is flying illegal aliens into U.S. cities by the hundreds. And he said, Musk said, the groundwork is being laid for something far worse than 9/11. Nope. Look, I didn't say it. Musk said it. I must admit, my husband says it all the time. That we don't know who these young men in fatigues crossing the border, who are all of army age, we don't know what they're doing here. We just don't. And if you're going to fly them all over the country, Musk said it's just a matter of time. And that should really concern you. And that should really bolster the case for who you're going to vote for. It's going to be part of my talking points. You know, we have a national security crisis at the border. Forget about, you know, how you feel about illegal people coming into this country. How do you feel about terrorists coming into this country? And even if 1% of the people crossing that border are terrorists, you got millions. 1% is going to be a sizable number. It only took 19 guys to bring the World Trade Center down, to crash into the Pentagon, and to be brought down in a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. 19 guys. It'd be far more than that if 1% are terrorists coming across that border. So we got to be able to articulate this. You got to tell people. And if they say, which you're going to get lots of, you got to stand your ground. And say, okay, so if that's okay with you, how about this? And then you go to point number 2 or 3 or 5 or 8. You know what people are concerned about. You know, how do you feel when the administration and the media lies to you about how the economy is great? How's it in your house? Is it great when you go to Publix? No, it's not great. Well, then, you know, maybe you ought to consider that it's this administration's problem and fault. Because it was great in 2016 and in 2018. And then because of COVID in 2019, the world got turned upside down. But we still had somebody there who was able to lead us through that mess and actually able to start a recovery, which this administration wants to take credit for, interestingly enough, but that ain't gonna fly. So that's the story. I'm excited. I broke out my Rules for Radical, read it already, half of it, and reminded me of how we have to do this. And I'm going to put together this plan, this bullet points, and you're going to take it if you're interested. And you're going to try this out with everybody. And you've got to be confident. You know, I'm going to do a lot of prepping so that I give you a pep talk first. You know, you can't just go in there and be waffling and, oh, it's my daughter, I don't want to confront her. Nonsense. I practiced on my kids. Trust me. You got to bowl them over with facts. So I thank you for your time this time. Until next time, my plan is to be back here tomorrow at 3, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So what's in you? Is there a fight in you, a warrior in you? I'm going to unleash it. May God bless you and may God save the United States of America. See you tomorrow at 3.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.